It's Great Mondays Radio. I'm Josh Levine, your host, founder of Great Mondays. We help executives from hypergrowth technology and social enterprise organizations build cultures that attract, engage, and retain top talent. If you'd like to be a guest on our program, hang out for about 20 minutes and I'll tell you how. Hey, everybody, the coffee is hot and it's Great Mondays Radio. Today, I am interested in talking about the connection of the rise of the gambling economy, the role AI plays in society, why work, time at work doesn't necessarily equal success. And it is all driven by this concept around the decoupling of work and reward. And today, to talk about that with me is cultural futurist and brand strategist Jasmine Bina. She's the CEO of Concept Bureau, a strategy firm, as well as the co-founder of a community called Exposure Therapy. And she thinks about a lot of really interesting future-forward things. And this is something that is both relevant in work, at work, and in the larger society. So, Jasmine, thank you so much. Let's talk about the decoupling of work and reward. Sketch it out for us. What do you mean by this decoupling? What is this?
So, you know, if you look at a lot of the signals we're getting in culture, they're kind of implicitly telling us that you don't get rewarded for work like we used to. This equation that work equals reward doesn't math like it used to. And it's coming from all kinds of places. So, you know, we could start super wide. You know, if you look at GLP-1s, for example, GLP-1s tell you that all of your hard work, like creating like a fit body, doesn't mean anything anymore because anybody can kind of, you know, fake it with GLP-1s. Now, I'm not putting that down at all. I'm a GLP-1 user and I think it's a great medicine for people. But it kind of sends this implicit message that, like, you know, you don't win any extra social favor just because you are thinner or you have a conforming body. And there's a multi-trillion dollar industry around this story of the morality of working on your body. You look at crypto. Crypto means anybody can be a millionaire overnight. So all of your hard-earned investing acumen doesn't mean anything anymore. And you can make a stupid amount of money faster than anything we've ever seen in the past before. If you look at the TikTokification of everything, so basically everything has become an extension of the TikTok algorithm, right? Every social media platform is basically TikTok at this point, but like also the TikTokification of media and the news and movies and, you know, even things like mental health and the publishing industry. It means that if you're a creator, you would really know this. You might not know this as a creator yourself. All the time you've spent building your brand and your audience doesn't mean anything anymore because you're just pulling the slot machine every day of the algorithm just to see like what hits and what doesn't. And so, you know, how can we say work equals reward like it used to, especially now that there's AI? And all that time you've spent building, you know, mastering your craft doesn't mean anything anymore because somebody else can just use AI and do a job that's just as good. Like I said, the equation falls apart. And that's a big problem in the West, especially the US, where, you know, the Protestant work mythology is built on the idea of work equals reward.
American society is built on the idea of work equals reward. It is how we think about the way we engage and like you said, evaluate others and the worth of ourselves and others. The example that you wrote in one of your pieces about this that I thought was really interesting and something that I noticed but didn't really connect it to what you're talking about is the distributed work versus butts and seats.
Yeah.
So the reason why, you posit, leaders are, ruffled by, I think is a nice way to put it, this, like you can work from anywhere, not from the office, is because you're measuring it with the time in seat methodology. And if you don't have the butt or the seat, then you don't have a way of recognize that and rewarding that. And it's been, I think previously we've had this results only workplace kind of thing, and I think that's an early indicator of that. Can you talk a little bit more about what is happening in the workplace that is connected to or is an example of the decoupling of work and reward?
Actually, I would, there's something very interesting happening there, and you're absolutely right about, this idea of like, we are measuring outputs in ways that don't necessarily serve us. But I read something recently that's been on my mind, and I've written about it a couple of times. I wish I could remember the name of the researcher that mentioned this, but essentially he said that something else has decoupled. When people don't feel like they have job security anymore, everybody feels like they're a free agent. And I think this is very true. White collar workers are all contractors now. Blue collar workers are all subcontractors. Even if you have a cushy job, you know deep down that you're a free agent too, because you can't count on it. And we're in this interesting situation now where like your Uber driver and your doctor both think they're free agents on this like rags to riches pathway. And that has massive cultural implications, because when you think you're a free agent, that changes how you vote and who you vote for. It changes how you act in the workplace. It changes how you make relationships. It changes how you value yourself. That is another thing that is where that we're seeing the decoupling kind of shifting how people act inside of the office. You might have noticed on LinkedIn, everybody's developing a personal brand now, as they should, because they're realizing, they are a product. And not so much like just, a talent that's being hired at a company. We did research on elite talent for like mid to upper level management. And you'll find that when those people are approached, by like a headhunter or, whoever, a talent person, before they even look at the company that has the role open, they will look up the hiring manager. Because they realize that like when you're out for yourself and like you can't trust in the system, the only thing that stands between you and what you want within a company or some sort of like, sense of stability in your career or going on the career ladder is the person that's holding you back. We saw a lot of research like that. And that is very much informed by the free agent mentality, in that like people don't believe that they're a part of a system. They don't trust a system. They think they are basically just kind of renting their time out to a company. I'm saying it in a bit, it's not as dire as I'm describing it, but deep down, that was like the mental shift that we saw when we did that research. That was really interesting. That really changes, it changed for the brand that we were working with at the time, like how they present themselves as an employer brand and how they presented their hiring managers as well.
So this is a strategy. I just want to make sure I understand this. This is a strategy that elite talent in this case are employing to overcome or compensate for the breaking of the work and reward. Is that right?
Absolutely. Yeah. There's like
And
just a pervading sense of impermanence and I don't want to say responsibility, but like an indebtedness maybe. Like I'm sure people feel this already.
well, I mean, I think we saw that attitude start to, or like the perceiving of that attitude in the quiet quitting era when we said, they don't care about you. You don't care, why should you care about them? And my kind of observation is from a different lens. I think we're looking at the same thing, but the metabolism of these organizations are speeding up. And so they're going to bring you on and then spit you out quicker, right? So you are, whether you're a full-time employee or not, I agree that you're a contractor, or at least you should act like that. And that becomes really an important indicator of, or an important driver of how you, to your point, actually behave, invest in yourself, spend your time, spend your money.
Absolutely.
What are some of the other predictions that you have around what is going to happen, what is going to continue to happen as work and reward, hard, what we perceive as hard work equals we're going to climb the corporate ladder. What is going to happen, just kind of in society? What are you seeing start to happen?
Well, we're starting to see kind of two paths being taken by people. So when work equals reward falls apart, you start to see a faction of people that start to worship chance. So it's a direct correlate to like why there's the rise of the gambling economy, and why gambling has become so pervasive, and it's why it's become suddenly normalized to see people like gambling on like, natural disasters like the Palisades fire on Kalshi or something like that. So you have that side of things, and people have a greater appetite for chance and things like that. It's why you see like, the way the stock market is manipulated by people. On the other side of it, you have, people will still always be searching for meaning. They just realize that they can't get it from work, so they try to find it in other places. And we talk about cultural vacuums in our work. The reason why things feel so unstable in the world right now is because there are these huge cultural vacuums in our landscape where va meaning has just kind of like fallen out from beneath our feet. And so they feel like these huge sinkholes. But the thing about cultural vacuums is they don't stay empty. Like they kind of suck things down. So, they kind of bring the future forward. And we have to fill these holes with something. Sometimes it's like distraction or chaos or noise, but eventually it has to be filled with something meaningful. And in the work department, we see people increasingly finding ways to attain meaning outside of work. And sometimes it might look like, for example, spirituality or the rise of religion. We've seen a rise in like all kinds of, religion is rising in the zeitgeist, but also like spirituality, astrology is through the roof. We have a whole new rash of like AI churches and moon worship and all that stuff. Other times, finding meaning outside of work can look like what I sometimes call cosplay. So like, you have things like the whole trad life movement with Hannah Nealman and Ballerina Farm. You have like Disney adults and LARPing communities. And I'm not saying that these things are necessarily like cosplay to demean them, but that people kind of wear these identities like costumes. It kind of gives them a meaning making system.
Well,
Sometimes.
it's meaning making cut whole cloth, right? It already exists, right?
Exactly. There's
So
the, that's right. It's such a great way of putting it. The template, the rules, the guidebook is there. And it's just like any, just like religion, actually. It's a
yeah,
really good point that you make. It's a great
it's
point
the
that you
same
make.
thing, right? And that is the appeal of it. Here are the rules, and here's how we believe meaning is made.
That's an
And this
excellent
is what you wear. This is
point.
what you this is the day that you do the thing, right?
Yeah.
And that is very comforting. I don't think it's bad in any way, but you can absolutely see that how those things fill big meaning sinkholes.
That's such a great way of putting it. Absolutely. Another way that we see people finding meaning outside of work oftentimes looks like community. So there's been a rise in communes, things like momunes, where single moms live together to raise their children, eco-living compounds, intergenerational living. And then sometimes finding meaning outside of work looks like actually leaving community. So I wrote a piece, but it's kind of like also a punchline that like no matter what socioeconomic status you have, no matter where you are on the ladder, everybody has an exit fantasy. So it could be like a cabin on an off-grid piece of land. It could be van life or boat life. It could be homesteading. I joke that we all know way too much about homesteading. It could be, living off of the land, a private island. It could be, the tech oligarchs and like, having
New
a
Zealand,
bunker. A bunker, yes, exactly. So, you look at all of these things and in my line of work, you look for patterns when you see that much activity. And if you look at them, all of these things really actually look like play. And play is very distinct. Play happens when you have when three conditions are met, then suddenly the special rules of the game emerge. So if you give people, let me see if I remember, freedom, separateness, and safety, those are the conditions for creating a game. And all of those living models I just described provide people with all of that. And these are ways of playing with meaning making. You can argue that playing with meaning is the highest form of play that there is. And it's especially interesting when you realize like that changes the incentive structure from being like extrinsic to intrinsic. It's actually quite a threat to our old working models if people find meaning outside of work.
Yes.
because they get meaning out of it for the sake of the thing itself, instead of needing external validation or money or whatever. It could be a very positive thing.
Well, so so when you talk about exiting as play, exiting is I am explicitly rejecting the old models of the old assumptions. And what I find interesting connecting play to the costumes, right? The trad wife, the whatever it is, we're all playing at something. And it's such a compelling case to be made. Do we need a predefined model or template in order to play? Or can we define it for ourselves? And I'm just
You
looking for solutions, right? So it's like
can.
I'm trying to cope with, the sinkholes. So do I have to start showing up to temple again? Or do I make my own, can I make my own community? Like what are
Oh,
the
these were
ops?
just some examples. There are all kinds of niche things that people are doing for themselves. It doesn't need to be like a large community already there. It could look like so many different things. These are just kind of like the more dominant examples that I can point to that most people can see. But it does need to have rules, and it needs to have the freedom, safety, and separateness. That's what makes it play. And if you are searching for meaning in your life, if you find it someplace, you will probably, I could almost guarantee you will always find those four things. To find meaning, we need those four things. And that's to find meaning as play, you need to have those four things. And that doesn't have to look like the examples I gave at all. It could be many other things. It could be parenting, it could be lots of other things. But people find it easier when there's a community already there. And, people have already stress tested it. And there's a sense of belonging too. So that's why they work.
When you started your community exposure therapy, did you think about it like this? I mean, was that reward decoupling of work and reward and play and all that stuff? Did you, or was it kind of in parallel, authentically, like, I feel like we need to start a community, and then you're like, oh, this is why I was motivated to do it.
So no, I started exposure therapy with my partner a year and a half ago, almost 2 years ago now. We only started it because I've been publishing for a long time. We had this kind of informal community of people around us that always wanted to engage. So, all right, we really tried to think of like how to make a community that actually works. I'm good at community building. I've done that for a lot of our clients. Exposure therapy very much lives up to its name. You will always be exposed and provoked, and that's what forces people to talk to each other. But actually, this stuff that I just described to you came up in research that we did for the community. So it's also a community where we park a lot of our research. And now that I can kind of see it, because here's the thing, when you're building, you're living 24 hours at a time. You are just trying to get to the next day, building the thing and like making it work. But only now that it has legs can I look back and like start to tinker with things a little bit and see like how I can pull different elements. But I have thought about these pieces, creating freedom and safety, like those things sometimes stand in opposition to each other. Special rules can be meaningful, but they can also be restrictive. So all of these things are spinning plates. And you're always kind of pushing and pulling to create a balance. Nothing stays stable from one day to the next. And I have thought about it in a lot of ways, making it feel like a special space, sanctified. When you create spaces that are distanced from the everyday, so spaces where the rules are very different from the everyday, you can engineer how people behave. People behave differently when you change the rules. That's why people behave differently in Disneyland. And people behave differently when they go to like Comic-Con, and they behave differently in a church.
It's a vacation from life.
Yeah, exactly. It's the rules are suspended, but there's a different set of rules. And usually what happens when the rules of everyday life are suspended is that people are willing to make themselves more vulnerable. In all of those spaces, people make themselves more vulnerable. And when you are more vulnerable, it's much easier to create trust, which is really the basis of every community, especially ours.
That's really, really interesting. What can, leaders, managers, or even founders of companies take from this? So where, we've kind of said, aha, fuck the old way. Like, you can create your own, find meaning outside. Do leaders need to, I guess there's two ways you can approach it, if we simplify it, right? Try to create meaning inside, or just say, yeah, it's just a job, and go and find it other places.
I would advise differently depending on what the company is and what their challenges are internally. But I think being clear about which side of that equation you fall into is really, really important, and being honest about it and actually like discussing it. It's when there's confusion that people might feel shortchanged or feel like they're used, or you might feel like you're getting used as a leader. I think every kerfuffle I've had as a leader is because I was not clear about my intentions or my expectations when it came to like how you participate in this space. And that's what I've actually learned as the founder of exposure therapy too. It's a very tight-knit community. And what I've learned is that you come, there's 130 members right now, like from all over the world. And like, we talk about really charged topics. We study culture. That's what exposure therapy is. So, you get caught up in like these conversations that can feel very electric sometimes, and they can feel a little overcharged. And I learned quickly that like setting the rules of the special space is rarely about what you say or what's in your guidebook or like what's in the Slack channel. It's about the energy that you bring to it because everybody's looking to you as the leader. And everything I've ever solved, I learned this the hard way. I first like calmed myself, settled myself, and like centered my emotions and kind of had to like grow up about whatever that topic was. And then once you bring that energy to it, everybody just aligns to you. It's like a magnet. People will just kind of align to that. And a lot of times the special rules of a space just have to be embodied. It's not about them being written down. It's about like somebody actually carrying the rules physically, spiritually, psychically, and then everybody can kind of align to that.
That's interesting. I feel like when you're under 200 people, you probably could do that, and you have touched all, but you have to model it. I mean, you can't not model it, right? So I think up until 200, you need to model it. But somewhere in there, 100, 200, 300, you need to actually you do need to codify it and basically say, this is how we, are expecting to run the game. I think so. Just to restate it as kind of a takeaway here is, as a manager, a leader, a business owner, or a founder, you one needs to understand that work no longer equals reward. And even if you think that's how you're running it, that's not how your people are actually engaging in it. And they're actually coping in a bunch of different ways, some healthy, some not so healthy. And it is your job to determine what kind of role you want to play in their lives as a place of employment. Is it step back to, hey, just show up and, there's this transactional, moment, or lean in and say, we can actually offer more in a bunch of different ways. That way you are at least clear about who you're trying to, or who you're trying to be, and who you might be attracting or repelling.
Absolutely. And there's just no mistaking what is expected on both sides. That's the real benefit of either side. I wouldn't say either is right or wrong, but I think both have their absolute pros and cons. They both require work in different ways. I think the greatest thing you can offer people right now in a time where there's so much uncertainty and people feel like they're out for themselves is clarity on what your relationship to them actually is. That's actually a tremendous gift to somebody because I think you could take a lot of like our work culture grievances over the last few years and it would boil down to that mismatch of like promises and expectations. But it requires a frankness that I think a lot of companies might have difficulty with.
That I have talked a lot about that particular challenge. I do think we have a communication honesty challenge. I think probably it goes right back to where we started, which is that kind of Protestant American, like, don't offend, right? Like, you don't want to bring that up. And I think that's actually a big part of our dysfunction and why we can't proceed or move forward, or why culture, lowercase c, inside of organizations that I think about aren't advancing or evolving as well as I would have hoped at this point.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, so really, really interesting stuff. Jasmine Bina, exposuretherapy.com as well as conceptbureau.com. She's got a lot to say, and she does say it in a lot of different ways. So check out her work. She's a culture futurist and brand strategist. And thank you so much. This was really, really interesting. I am now going to go forward in my life thinking about how people are finding meaning finding ways to fill the sinkhole that is the vacuum that is a lack of meaning in their lives. And I think it's really revelatory. So I really appreciate you sharing it with us.
My pleasure. I think it's a useful model for understanding people, so I hope it serves you well. And thank you for having me. I appreciate
Yes, of course. Thank you so much.
Awesome.
Thanks for listening to Great Mondays Radio. Hey, if you want to be a guest, head over to radio.greatmondays.com. And if you think this episode was interesting and your friends and fans would enjoy it, please share on social media. And if you want to get more people to understand the power of company culture in business today, please rate and review Great Mondays Radio on your podcast feed. It really helps us reach more people. If you want to hear more candid conversations with culture leaders, subscribe to Great Mondays Radio. I'd love to connect with you. Find me on LinkedIn at AKA Josh Levine, on YouTube at Great Mondays. And you can always email me, josh@greatmondays.com. Find out more about our work with hypergrowth technology and social enterprise organizations at greatmondays.com. I'm Josh Levine. Thanks for listening to Great Mondays Radio.